Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Bantering the Blue Shirts. It is 8:08 on Monday, July 15th, 2019, year of our Lord. My name is Joe Fortunato. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Michael the Merkel Murphy.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Mike, I'm great. How are you?
I'm tired. I'm also tired. 4.5 mile walk. I'm tired.
Mike walks almost every day. Did you know that about Michael?
I try to.
Rain or shine, Mike is out there. Middle of a hurricane, Mike is out there. Lightning storm, Mike fucking out there.
Out there, so, juggling poles.
Yep, metal poles. Poles that attract lightning. Mike, this is an exciting day, not for the podcast, more because we are doing what I like to call mega show. Much like Megalodon, only not a shark, but instead a podcast. Jeff Gordon, he gifted us 4 weeks of shows. And now he's punished us, Michael, with absolutely nothing to talk about. So we don't think we have enough for a flagship, just because all the things that we discussed last week with all the RFA signings and what we expected and some trade rumors and stuff, well, that's all the same stuff right now because nobody got signed. And outside of a rogue Larry
Except
Brooks
for
article...
Kako.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I forgot about... Well, that was such a foregone conclusion for us that...
I know, but it's still something to get
jazzed about. It's something to get really fucking jazzed about. Just jazz it right in there. So aside from a rogue Larry Brooks story that we'll talk about in regards of Jacob Trouba, not a ton to talk about on the flagship. We did, however, get a slew of questions. I got 5 questions in my email, and then we got questions through Patreon. So thank you all for donating. Patreon.com/blueshirtbanter. And those of you who are patrons, please send your questions through the Patreon Messenger app, because that will ensure that we see it, and we will make sure we answer your questions, because you are more important than everybody else. So... there you go. iTunes, leave 5 stars and a nice review. I think we've gotten like 15 or 16 5-star reviews in the past like week. And we had a shitload the week before. So a big thank you to everybody who is doing that. And thank you all for the support. We've had some great, great listenership. So we're here for you. We're doing this for you.
Thank you,
Michael, why don't you lead us off?
Yeah, so I thought we would start off by talking about Kako, just because why not, right?
It's the best news of the week, so yes.
It was, like you said, it was a foregone conclusion. We all knew he was going to sign. I think Joe is playing with a plastic bag.
My wife is just putting the garbage bag in the garbage bin.
Sounds like something you should have done for her, you son of a
bitch. Well, you know what, Michael? It sounds like you're just going to reprimand me, then that's what's going to happen.
And I wanted to ask you, specifically, Joe, a couple questions in regards to Kako re-signing, because of course everyone wants to know, you know, who he plays with and where he plays, and I want to know what you think is the right spot for him. Is it the top line with Zib and Panarin? Is that where he should be, or maybe should he be a little lower in the lineup, like second line, and you put him on the first power play?
It's a great question, and I think it's something that David Quinn is going to work with a lot. It would not surprise me if we saw Mr. Kako on the first line, especially in the beginning. But I almost feel like it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? You put him with Zibanejad, you put him with Panarin, and there's this sense of, okay, this kid is... He's going to be overshadowed, obviously, by these two guys. That's exactly what you want. We have top-notch talent in Panarin, and then... you know, a secondary, like, next level of talent in Zibanejad, and Kako doesn't really need to worry about anything, and that's all well and good, but there is a part of me that believes that there is no more of a pressure-oriented role than that top-line spot, even though he doesn't have to produce there, because there will be more eyeballs on him. There will be this stupidity sense of, oh my god, if he's not producing with them, who can he produce with? I do think that there is... I guess a merit is the right way to put it, to having him play on the top line, at least for part of the season or a piece of the season. But I do think he is more likely going to lock himself in as the second line winger, somebody who's going to play with maybe Krovstov for a period of time. But Buchnevich, it depends on who the Rangers' second line center is. Maybe it's going to be Ryan Strome, although that's a horrific thought. Hopefully it's Filip Hedl. And I think that's a better spot for him because it's a little bit less of this, everybody's eyes are on me, I need to make sure that I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to be mentality. But that being said, I would absolutely not be surprised if he saw time on the top line. I'm just slightly concerned that we've hyped Kakko up kind of in a similar fashion to the way that Elias Andersson was hyped up, where nobody's really seen him play yet. We're going off of, you know, international numbers, and there's the difference, obviously, is that Kakko is a legitimate talent, but the fact of the matter is he's going to struggle. I think you and I have said, and we've been on record as saying, that it would be amazing if he was a 40-point player for the New York Rangers, and generally 40-point players are not on the top line, and I just think that pressure might not be something that he's going to be looking to dealing with, especially as he acclimates to North American ice. That's a long way of saying I bet he's a second line player for most of the season, but I don't doubt we will see him on the top line.
I feel like it's a tricky one to answer because
spooky.
We don't know yet what's going on with Kreider, which is, like, you know, we don't want to necessarily on the show this week just talk about how things are still in a holding pattern and uncertain because, you know, we've spent so much time talking about Trouba and Kreider, but like you said, we'll touch on Larry Brooks's piece. But in regards to Kakko, I think he likes to think of himself as a playmaker more than a shooter, so he wants the puck. And, you know, if you're on a line with Artemi Panarin, it's Artemi Panarin's puck, right? Especially when it comes to the power play, where, you know, we should expect to see...
That is kind of a marriage that works, isn't it? Like, if Kakko is going to be the guy that's scoring goals, and there is... I don't mean to cut you off, but we do have to say that there's a difference between an Alexander Ovechkin goal scorer, somebody who legitimately does not need the puck whatsoever, right? Somebody who the puck can be on his stick for a millisecond and it's in the back of the net. And a Rick Nash goal scorer. Somebody who legitimately needs the puck. He has to, you know, that's how he creates space for himself. That's how he gets in front of the net. So Mike's point is a good one. I just want to clarify that. Panarin is a playmaker. Panarin can score, but Panarin is a playmaker. Panarin needs the puck on his stick. Kakko can score like that as well. But Kakko, a lot of the offense that he had in Liga and in the World Championship, right, it came from him dragging the puck like Rick Nash.
Yeah, and like, you know, with TPS in the Liga last season, 22 goals, 16 assists in 45 games at the Worlds, where he was just a beast, 6 goals, 1 assist. Like, I feel like he will adjust really comfortably to the role of, you know, the guy on that line who's supposed to shoot on the opposite wing there of Panarin. And then when it's not going to him, it's Mika Zibanejad, who obviously is not shy about shooting. And I like that because Kaapo Kakko is, you know, a lefty and Zibanejad's a righty. And to have those options with a playmaker like Panarin, I'm all about it. I feel like he should start there and he should really only be taken out of that top line role to mix things up or to maybe test him, you know, being the guy who has the puck more. And, you know, like you said, a lot of this will come down to that second line center and who it is. And, you know, I wrote a piece for the Banter about why the Rangers should really be, you know, dropping pucks in front of Filipino and making him watch a lot of video and get very comfortable with what his assignments are in the defensive and neutral zone as a center, because moving forward, he's who you want, you know, to be that second line center on this team. And it's crazy to think, but it's very likely, I don't know, I shouldn't say very likely, it is possible that we have Kravtsov, Hedel, Kakko as a second line, which is quite a thing. I think that only really happens if Kreider does get moved, but it's a very fun time to play the game of, you know, look at the, you know, the crystal ball and try to guess what this lineup looks like, Joe.
Yeah, it's...
There's all these exciting kids. There's going to be, you know, a lot of new faces. I mean, 2 huge new faces at least on the blue line with Trouba and Fox. And then, of course, you have Kaapo Kakko. You have Vitali Kravtsov. You have Filip Hedl ready to step into a bigger role. You have a very different-looking team and, of course, you know, the Panarin guy. So there's a lot of change, but I was interested, I think it was this morning, Joe, and I got an email from The Athletic where they do that kind of rundown, And, like, the very first sentence of the article was, "The Rangers rebuild is over with a Panarin signing." And I know we've heard David Quinn and JD talk about, you know, this is a build. Like, they kind of shy away from the rebuild word, because I feel like if you're saying rebuild, that means we're not trying to win. And the moves the Rangers made, it's very clear they want to start winning hockey games this season. But I don't think the building part of the team is done. And it really can't be done, you know, for the time being, because there are just a lot of guys here who are not going to be a part of this team when it's successful. I feel like the Rangers have too much kind of dead weight in the lineup.
It's almost not even dead weight as much as it is filler, like filler gaps,
yeah,
that you're
filler
just trying
is a much
to
kinder, a much
yeah
kinder term.
I mean,
Ryan,
who would you
Stroms, the,
like
the Vlad Nemestikov, the
Strom,
Brendan Smith, Mark Stahl, like
Nemestikov and Strom
at this stage of his career for Hank, like is Hank going to make this team better, or are we reaching the point where Georgiev is the better goalie to have,
or Shesterkin? I mean, you don't. Yeah, there's a double-edged sword on that one too.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I love Henrik Lundqvist, but you know, if we could be reaching that point where the kids are the better option, if you want to talk about winning, and the bottom line is Lundqvist is still here for 2 years with this cap hit, and the same is true of Stahl and Smith and Shattenkirk.
Yeah, Stahl, Strom, and Nemestikov are really the only guys that I would consider dead weight, quote unquote. Everything else is like Smith is stopgap, even if he doesn't play, and even in a lesser sense, you know, Strom is kind of a stopgap as well. It's the fact of the matter is the New York Rangers, they're going to get better, and they're going to get better in the future, not because of moves that they're going to make off the ice, like free agency and trading, although hopefully, you know, if you can make a good trade, so be it. It's more going to be the fact that they are so young across the board that once you have an opportunity to get these kids some legitimate NHL experience, and guys like Hedl start stretching their legs a little bit, and you just see the growth of some of these guys, D'Angelo, Fox, whoever it may be, I think that's going to make, it's going to be a critical difference for the New York Rangers. And part of the reason why it's so exciting to see Kaapo Kakko potentially be a first-line player is because the Rangers have not had a guy like him in who knows how long. I mean, honest to God, the Rangers have not had somebody like him in since I can remember. And you don't get 18-year-olds who could legitimately put up 20 goals very often. So part of the thing that you need to remember, the Rangers are a young team. If the Rangers are not good next year, it's not because they're quote-unquote a bad hockey team. They might just not be ready to be good yet. And there's an enormous difference between that and what we saw with the Rangers in 2015 or even last year with under David Quinn. I'm skeptical about how we're going to see some bigger decisions made. I don't know what's going to happen with the Mark Stahls of the world. I don't know what's going to happen with the Ryan Stroms of the world. Obviously, Jeff Gordon is trying to do something because there's a reason why Trouba hasn't signed yet. There's a reason why the Rangers have D'Angelo and Buchnevich and what's his name? Lemieux, who hasn't been signed yet. And Lemieux was somebody that we thought was going to be super easy, right? So
should still be easy.
I didn't even mention Kreider.
Waiting on him until the bigger pieces.
I didn't even mention Kreider when we were talking about where Kakko could play, because it just the assumption in my head is that he's gone, and that might not be a correct assumption. It does appear like the two sides are at least pretending like they're going to have some type of a relationship moving forward at worst, and a legitimate relationship moving forward at best. But There's a lot of question marks up in the air, and although we don't have anything to talk about right now, it's not because things are set. It's because the Rangers just...
You said Kakko, by the way. You mean Kreider.
In regards to what? Probably.
What you just said.
We just don't know yet. The Rangers, the roster is not set. The roster is not finalized. There are still a million questions that are going on for the New York Rangers. We just don't know anything yet. That's why there's really not that much to talk about. So just keep that in mind as we, you know, go forward with that. The other big question, and it never felt like a question, but now it kind of, it's being posed as one, is essentially, is Jacob Trouba looking at what happened with Artemi Panarin and thinking to himself,
money.
I want to sign a one-year deal right now and then sign an 8-year max contract next year when I'm eligible for it because I'll be on the New York Rangers through the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And it is... I'm trying to think of a nice way to word this. Larry Brooks has had some pretty significant opinions of late, call it the past 2 years, but really the past year or so, that have not translated into realities that have occurred. The Trouba trade, you know, what he thought it was going to take versus what it actually was, that the Rangers weren't getting Kevin Shattenkirk. I believe he was one of the people who believed that the Islanders were the front runners for Artemi Panarin as well. So they're, you know, take it with a grain of salt. That's a huge leap. Is it possible, I guess? How much of this is because Jacob Trouba, you know, wanted things his way in Winnipeg? I don't know. But I tweeted this out. The Rangers knew damn well what they were getting into when they traded for Trouba in the first place. I would be astounded if they were unprepared financially for what his ask was. It doesn't make sense.
That's a very good point. The other thing I feel like this is important to say. I was talking to Tom and Shayna about, you know, what we could maybe talk about on the show tonight. And I think it was Tom who brought up the fact that, like, the Rangers are not the only team who have, you know, big questions in terms of RFAs. You know, there are...
Mitch Marner's name screams that out.
Yeah, Mitch Marner is a pretty big one. Matt Tkachuk is a pretty big one. But, like, if you look at... players who filed for arbitration who haven't signed since, like, it's pretty clear that Trouba is the biggest name of that bunch, but he's not at all the only player by note. I feel like, you know, it's a big deal that he's not yet signed, but, you know, there's a lot, it's not that he's peerless. In fact, Neil Pionk has filed for arbitration. His date is set at July 24th in Winnipeg, so... Like, obviously, those are radically different players in value. Although, I'm not sure what Kevin Cheveldayoff thinks, but looking at, like, the fact that, yeah, there are other teams that don't have key guys signed. And that shouldn't come as a surprise.
No, it's not uncommon. Here's the one difference, though, and yeah. This is going to sound like I'm putting more fuel on the fire, but I'm really not, because I'm not at all concerned about Trouba.
Yeah.
The difference is that a guy like Mitch Marner, who is easily the biggest RFA name on the table. I'm sorry?
Mika Rantanen, an 87-point player last season.
No, he's fine.
An RFA.
I mean, there's a ton of them. Braden Point hasn't signed yet, has he?
I don't think so. No.
So there's definitely name. The point that I'm going to make is the difference between a guy like Marner and Trouba is that the Rangers traded for Trouba. So there is this sense of, oh, they kind of have to give him what he wants because, you know, they made this investment with assets. And that is true in a sense. The other side of the coin, at least when discussing something like this, is the Rangers have a lot of business that needs to get done. And Trouba is the biggest piece of business remaining. He's going to be the biggest contract. It's not even going to be close. He himself very well may end up being more expensive than Buchnevich and D'Angelo and Lemieux combined.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised. I would actually be surprised if he wasn't. Yeah. So you are kind of dealing with this. Jeff Gordon probably, he knows he can't be offer sheeted because he filed for arbitration. He's probably waiting to see how everything else shakes out. And I have to feel like this sort of silence that we're getting out of the Rangers is because they're looking for moves to make from a cap saving standpoint to try to figure this all out. I don't think they're trading Buchnevich.
Kreider, Strom, or Vlad.
And if they want to keep Kreider, it's almost even more finagling. Because then you have guys you have to worry about paying once they come off their bridge deals. If you're going to bridge D'Angelo and, you know, Buchnevich and I keep wanting to call Lemieux Lettieri. I don't know why.
He's also an
RFA. He is. And probably, I don't know, qualifying offers went out today. So we haven't heard anything about that. I'm a little curious. But the point of the matter is there's a lot of business that has to get done. I'm not concerned. Nothing outside of that Larry Brooks article has been made publicly of Trouba kind of forcing his hand here with the Rangers, and I think we'd have known about it by now if he tried to do a one-year deal. The flip side, too, is if he does want to do a one-year contract and then sort of force the Rangers' hand, they can easily sign him to a one-year deal and then trade him at the deadline if they really feel that slighted to a contending team for a haul, instead of having to worry about signing him to an eight-year deal when he's 26 instead of 25. It might seem petty, but there is something to be said for doing business that way if he's being a hard ass. And his agent is notoriously tough. But again, how much of this is the fact that he didn't want to be in Winnipeg and Winnipeg kind of caused issues from the get-go? And how much of this is actually who he is? The Rangers intended him to be a long-term player this year. The Rangers intended him to be a long-term player moving forward. I don't think that's changed. What could have happened in the past month that would have made that change? Outside of the fact that Trouba all of a sudden realizes his leverage? Come on. Is it possible? Yes, but there's no way that if that was the case, that the Rangers would not be at least leaking some of that information publicly. Just to try to see, just to kind of garner this fan reaction when they come in with a one-year deal and be like, listen, this is why we had to do this. This is what he wanted. And the Rangers, they've said nothing. So that's my take on that.
No, I think that's the reasonable answer here. And, you know, like what Larry Brooks wrote, like, I understand what he's looking at and what he's talking about, because there are a lot of players, especially with the potential buyout looming, like, and, you know, guys thinking about, you know, also the expansion draft and how hesitant GMs are to give out, you know, the term with, you know, like, oh yeah, here's your clause, you have a no move, you can't be taken the expansion draft, and here's your contract with buyout protection, which is like what Panarin has, just, you know, only $1 million in salary, and all the rest of his money is in bonuses. And obviously that's very tempting for a player, and the Rangers are one of the few teams in the league that can do that. They have the big pocketbook to do that, right? The question to me is, how much should we read into Trouba's opinion on what his next deal should look like changes with, you know, as the weeks go on here, or as the days go on and we get closer to the date of his hearing? Like, I feel like if we haven't gained a lot of ground, you know, by this time next week, yeah, we should be sweating a little bit, right? But I'm not... We've seen a lot of these things come right down to the wire, and then a deal gets hammered out. You know, I feel like there's also, to some extent, I don't think there's too much to this, Joe, but it's maybe worth saying that Trouba and his agent might want to proceed with some caution just because of the reputation of, like, you know, oh, he doesn't want to, you know, sign in Winnipeg, doesn't want to sign in New York, like, you know, what's the, like, how unreasonable is he? But I don't think that's going to be an issue until it kind of becomes an issue. I'm not suggesting that it is, but I think that is at least on the table.
Yeah, and again, that's something that they probably have on the back burner, even if it is a concern of theirs, simply because players talk. I mean, Trouba would be a valued defenseman regardless of what team he goes to. He's going to get his money one way or another. Really, the last point I'll make on this is unhappy negotiations generally do not stay private very long. Like, nothing has been said of this negotiation whatsoever. So
it leads us to believe that probably not too much.
Nothing bad is happening, and there's at least a level of understanding between the two sides of what they're doing. That's what I would not. If you start seeing reporters on the national scale or somebody other than Brooks kind of step up and say, well, listen, things are kind of getting hairy, Trouba wants X, the Rangers want Y, they're dug into a stalemate, then you can start panicking, especially as we come to is he the 29th or the 25th? I think he might be the 25th. So until you start seeing that, I would not be concerned whatsoever. But
yes,
again, unhappy negotiations, they don't stay private. They just don't. There's not when you have the ability to use the media the way that you want to.
I wanted to just reel off this list of other RFAs who have yet to sign that are pretty big deals, okay? Mitch Marner, Braden Point, Mikko Rantanen, Matthew Tkachuk, Kyle Connor, Brock Besser, Patrick Laine, obviously Trouba, Travis Konecny, Zach Werenski, still not signed. That's pretty freaking big.
God, these are, like, you could build a legitimate all-star team with these names.
Kevin Fiala, JT Compher, and, you know, the Rangers do have, you know, Booch and D'Angelo also in there. And it's so funny. I always think about Tony D'Angelo's season. He missed, you know, 21 games, still at 30 points. It's pretty goddamn good.
Point per other game player for the New York Rangers. Especially those guys don't grow on trees.
He had 19-19 average ice time. Will Butcher, 19-16. Will Butcher, 78 games, 30 points. D'Angelo, 61 games, 30 points. Some food for thought on that one. But yeah, there's a lot to this Trouba situation. And I also think this is an important point to make, right? Especially in light of, you know, the sentence I read this morning that definitely made me kind of go like, oh, is the rebuild really over? Because it seems kind of premature to say when the Rangers could essentially trade Kreider for a bunch of futures. You know, like, is that part of the rebuild? Of course it would be considered part of the rebuild. Like, so that there's still a lot of things on the table that can affect the shape of this team in the future that have more to do than just with, like, standard operating procedure. This roster, as you said, is still coming together. But the one thing that I think is really important here is the Rangers are locked at the hip with Panarin. $11.6 million for the full 7 years. They have to be very, very careful about the big pieces of this puzzle and how much money is invested in them. And I feel like, you know, it's kind of, I know there are a lot of people who might hear that and hear me say that and say, look, like, we don't have anyone signed after 2 years. Like, I get it. I know. But let's just say the Rangers.
But that changes so fast.
Yeah. And, like, just think about the Brady Shea contract. And it's like, ooh, okay. What do we have here? And let's say the Rangers maybe pay, you know, 500 or 700 more K than they a year than they were expecting for Trouba. And what they have with Panarin. Like, it's great they have all these kids, but you do have to keep these things in mind, especially if you're a team that contends. And, like, the reality is we talk so much, Joe, about you have to build from within, and that's the only real way to win. But all the teams that build from within also have to find players from outside one way or another. And having flexibility and cap space and having a good flexible plan for when that day comes is a good thing. You don't want to spend money you don't necessarily have to spend. I don't think the Rangers are going to get in that situation with Trouba, but I also think he's worth 7.5 for 7 years to me. Like, that's what he's worth. You pay
he's going to be a lot of money, rightfully so.
Yeah, and very much deservedly so. He is that kind of player, but I feel like the Rangers, more so than other teams, need to look at the contracts that are still hurting this team from the last time they thought they were going to win a cup. You know, they have to look at the $5.7 million on Mark Stahl, the buyout hit of $3.6 million on Dan Girardi. You know, the contract that they got at a discount of Shattenkirk. You know, the fact that they were able to escape the Brad Richards contract, you know, with an amnesty buyout. Like, this is a team that needs to be very careful about the way it spends money. And, like, you think back to this time last year, or, you know, around this time last year, with 2 years for $4 million each for Ryan Spooner and Vlad Nemestikov, and it does make you just say, like, okay, whoa, like, we have the money. But the thing is, not every team can take those contracts on. Like, you have to kind of be a little more careful, I think, is what I'm trying to say. And that's not what I mean specifically for Trouba, but it does fit into this RFA process. Like, you lock up Jacob Trouba, you do that. And then I think you have to ask that big question for, like, well, what about Chris Kreider? And I feel like it's very interesting to me that people are still split on Kreider, because to me it feels pretty logical that he's a luxury the team can't afford. And, like, they could hold on to him and move him at the deadline, but that carries with it a great deal of risk. Like, let's say he gets hurt. Let's say, which, you know, he has a history of getting injuries, too. Like, that would be disastrous to say, oh, crap, we didn't move him. We definitely were trying to move him to Colorado to get 16th overall in the draft. That didn't happen. And then we didn't move him before the season, even though we were trying to figure out how, you know, the money's going to work and whether or not it's worth keeping him around. And we kind of treaded water, and, you know, here we are. Like, we're still wondering whether the hell Chris Kreider is going to be here when...
I can see the argument that he's going to be a valuable player to the New York Rangers, that he's a valuable player right now, but there's just such a risk to a contract like that with where the Rangers are. I say that if you don't get the right deal, I can also see them being super regret. They could regret that trade absolutely. So yeah. It is a double-edged sword. You know what? Let's go to the questions because there are a bunch of Kreider questions. We did a lot. My daughter is screaming. Let's begin with Tall Guy Robert, a patron. Hi, Joe and Mike. Love the podcast. What do you think about the Rangers possibly moving extra salaries via trades, burying in the AHL buyouts, etc., to give breathing room for moves on the season? So I think we've discussed, you know, Kreider at length, Nemestikov. Yeah. Remember, if you're burying, I believe it's this year you save $1.075 million.
Yeah, I think
so. It's not a ton of money, but Mike, why don't you take some of the other options away while I quickly grab my daughter?
Yeah, sure. So I think we can safely expect you have Brendan Smith and Matt Bolesky buried, because that's kind of what makes the most sense. The other guys, I feel like they can move. I think there might be a temptation with, you know, the front office and probably also behind the bench to have at least one of Vlad Nemestikov and Ryan Strome, because they are kind of, you know, veterans that have been around enough that you can play at center in case a kid, i.e. Filip Hedl, isn't ready there. But moving one of those two contracts is really appealing, and I feel like a lot of teams should be interested in Vlad Nemestikov, because it's just a one-year deal. You know, he has the $4 million hit, which is just maybe a little overpriced for what he is, but he's not too far removed from, you know, the big season he had before he got traded to the Rangers. And the Rangers could sell very, very high on Ryan Strome's shooting percentage. The problem is you have to find a GM willing to buy into that. And those are the two guys I think are the most logical for, in terms of, you know, talking about this moving salary. I mean, other than Kreider, of course. But I don't think there's a market out there for Brendan Smith. And according to Larry Brooks, although it's really the only place we've seen it, there's not a market out there for Kevin Shattenkirk, which to this day still flummoxes.
Boggles the mind.
Yeah,
you know what the only problem is? The Rangers are going to have a very difficult time trading Nemestikov and Strome without taking salary back. That's the problem right now.
Yeah, because the teams that would be interested in them, like, you'd have to, I don't know, and like, there are a lot of teams right now that have big gaping holes in their lineup. Like, Columbus comes to mind, right? Where it's, wow, Columbus would be a great place for someone like Kreider to land, but Columbus doesn't want to trade for anything. They gave up so much to get to the, for their cup run and to get through that first round. Like, they don't have, forget what it is, I think they don't have a second and a third for the next 2 years. I'll have to check that on Cap Friendly while I'm finishing my point. But, like, they have so much money in cap space. I'm sorry, they don't have a second for the next 2 years. They do have their third in 2021. But, like, they have all this money in cap space, and, like, what have they done in free agency, Joe? They signed Gustav Nyquist.
You had to know you were going to lose that battle as soon as you...
You just
knew you were fucked.
Especially because Bobrovsky and Panarin were combined $21 million, like, on the market, what they got in terms of AAV, but... You know, there's the question of where would Strome or Vlad go? And there are teams that need center depth, and I feel like, you know, you could sell one of them. I think that Nemestikov has the higher value. I also think he's the far more valuable player to the Rangers.
Yeah, but Strome could have that good old reputation value, though. Scored a bunch of goals, change of scenery type nonsense. You know how it goes.
Change of scenery, you know, on... After what is his third NHL team, he suddenly becomes a 20-goal scorer again. What happens with his fourth NHL team, right?
Become a 40-goal scorer.
Who the hell knows? But I feel like it's safe to say this ship has sailed on his reputation as a former fifth overall pick. Like, he's 26 years old now. This is not...
I don't know, Michael. You'd be very surprised at what general managers do.
some general managers, but those are the ones who keep getting fired.
Well, you gotta dangle. You dangle.
Like, you can't trade Strome back to Edmonton, Joe.
No, but I don't know. At this point, who the fuck knows?
Well, yeah, that's fair.
Another patron, Sammy Vogel Seidenberg. Question for the next Off the Post episode. Well, this is the mega show, Sammy, so you're on it. If you could not have traded one of these four Rangers, who would you have kept? Duclair, Dubinsky, Anisimov, Prust. Her selection is Anisimov. Up until about 2 years ago, I would have told you Duclair hands down. But the correct choice is Anisimov. Prust, by the time he was gone, was a shell of himself. Dubinsky was Dubinsky for 2 years, and then, I mean, that's just an atrocious contract for him. And Duclair never put it together. I mean, the fear of what Pavel Buchnevich would be if he doesn't put it together sort of is Anthony Duclair, although Buchnevich is a better hockey player. So it's got to be Anisimov. He carved out a great career for himself. At least for me.
I like Artem Anisimov. I always have. But, like the deal he signed, I'm checking now, the deal he signed in 2015 with Chicago, with a $4.55 million hit, like, it was pretty rich for a guy who, you know, never got to 50 points, I guess. But, you know, he got banged up a bit. I think on this team right now, I don't know, I would probably say, am I crazy to say Duclair? Like,
you might be. He had Anisimov was a hell of a hockey player, great two-way hockey player. His offense never really blew you away, but there were what is this? 3 years ago now. 3 years ago, he had 45 points in 65 games with the Blackhawks. I mean,
but how much of that is due to who he was playing?
I don't know, Michael.
But here's the other thing:
a three-time 20-goal scorer, actually 4-time 20-goal scorer.
All right, but I have two things to say to you.
Here we go. Here's where it comes down to Mike hurting my feelings.
No. The first of which is Duclair is 23, 24 in August.
Jesus, is he that young still?
The second of which is he had 19 goals in 74 games split between the Blue Jackets and the Senators. Like, I still take Anthony Duclair.
I do love me some Anthony Duclair, I have to say. Let's see.
Anisimov's 31.
I'm more talking player during their quote-unquote prime type aspect.
Yeah.
And when the Rangers traded Anisimov, if he was a kid, he was probably 23 or 24 himself. Duclair, I mean, what did he have, 33 points last year in about 60-some-odd games, 64 games? It's not a terrible season.
No, he's a goal scorer, man. And, Torts fell in love with him in Columbus. He pushed him really hard, but he admitted that, trading away Duclair was really hard for him because they worked really hard on his game, and he's one of those guys, the skill is unbelievable. So, I definitely wouldn't, having someone like Duclair.
It's a great question.
Give me Duclair every day, all day, over Jimmy Vesey.
Fuck yeah.
It's not even close to me. Just in terms of the sort of players they are, roughly the same, age, and, both play wing and all that. But, yeah. That's a great question.
It is a great question. I like that question. Atlantic Ocean Suites. There's an email question. Hi, Mike and Joe, parentheses, and Joe and Mike. Can't get it wrong. He told me his name. Mike Strum. Can't mess up pronunciation of my name. I may have. Also, you spelled my name wrong. It's J-O-E, not J-O, but that's fine. He's the one who suggested that we use emails if you don't have Twitter. So he thanks us for this. You're very
welcome.
Another
Mike. What a surprise.
Shut your mouth. My question is, what chance do we have of having a Rookie of the Year next year? And who is most likely to get it if it is a Ranger?
It's Kaapo Kakko if it goes anywhere.
Yeah, and yes, it's 100% Kakko. I mean, I'm just saying.
If Jack Hughes plays with.
I'm just fucking saying, ball. Michael, that I think that Kakko is more prepared for the NHL game than Hughes is right now. Hughes is a child.
Very fair.
He's a child. He is an infant. Kakko is an ox human. He's ox man.
Kakko is if you're in the Serengeti, he's the lion who's his mane isn't all the way grown in, but he's still just a murder mouth. You know what I mean?
A murder mouth?
Whereas Jack Hughes is still like little whiny Simba voiced by, you know, Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
All right, let's get to the next question before you continue.
Did Matthew Broderick do the voice of old Simba? I think he did.
When Simba came back after
we had a bunch of bugs with Timon and Pumbaa.
Remember that? We took my daughter to Build-A-Bear yesterday because...
Oh, fun.
We did a little mommy-daddy-daughter day on her final weekend of being an only child, or second to last weekend of being an only child, because she loves lions. She's on my lap right now with Kion, who is Simba's child, who has his own show, his own animated show on Disney called The Lion Guard. So we took her because they have all sorts of Lion King stuff, and we were like, oh, this will be nice. It'll be an opportunity for her to get a new lion. And you know who she wanted? The fucking warthog. She wanted him.
Pumbaa.
Wanted him.
Pumbaa, not Puma. Pumbaa's a name for a mountain lion.
Pumbaa. Hakuna Matata.
What do you have the name picked out for the next Fortunato baby?
Joseph.
No.
Not a junior, though. I am also a Joseph, not a junior. So
why not Michael?
Because Michael is a horrible name.
Am I going to be a godfather this time?
Yes. To another child. Sean Gabay, if Kreider is traded, who is the Rangers' best option to fill his role in front of opposing netminders? That's a great question.
I like that question.
It could be Kakko.
Kakko is a big physical guy. He's hard as hell to move. Brendan Lemieux is my guess.
On the power play and stuff, though? I'm talking about Kreider's complete offensive impact. Kakko, he can clean up the junk, man.
Kakko is 6'3".
He could do a lot of that.
Almost 200 pounds. So.
He's an ox, a human ox.
And he's strong as hell on his skates. I like Brendan Lemieux. I just hella think strong. Would be a good power play two option. He's not going to replace Chris Kreider. Chris Kreider is so good in that role.
That is how Lemieux scored a lot of his goals last year too. Yeah. Was in front of the net.
Yeah, he's a guy who scores from the Jimmy Vesey area, like, you know, a stick's length around the net. So like, you scored 6 feet around the net for the most part, and he's really adept at wraparounds. I know that's something he worked on with his dad, that part of his game, and getting good at that. Because it became evident when he was a prospect that, you know, he had to get kind of creative to find his goals. Because he's never going to be the fastest guy or have the silkiest hands. So, you know, when you're a guy like that,
silky mitts.
Other question mentioned Brandon Prust. Like, Brandon Prust scored goals any way you can get them. Same is true of Brian.
It's a little different.
Maybe you know what? Maybe the answer to that is a free agent. Maybe it's Brian Boyle.
Oh, you know what, Michael? Speaking of that, are you ready for this one? Jason Silverman, I thought though the Rangers have accelerated the rebuild, they're still rebuilding, be it the later stages. Why sign free agents like Brian Boyle when you have a number of younger kids that need to play? Developing younger players is still the number one goal in the coming year, no? Why don't you handle that one, Michael?
That is a very good question and a fair question, especially because the Rangers did sign Greg McKegg, even though it's just...
Who, there's no way he's... Like, could he possibly be an NHL expected talent?
Joe, it was a one-way deal.
Yeah, but he was signed for less than the total to be buried. So, like, Joe? I'm just saying, Michael, we talk a lot about the ways that Jim Dolan is a good owner for the New York Rangers and hockey. One of the ways is that you don't give a fuck about his money, man.
Joe?
If you got to pay the guy $750K to play in the AHL, you pay him a fucking $750K to play in the AHL. Period, end of story. You know, he paid fucking Wade Redden.
I'm just saying, they re-signed Cody McLeod last season.
Keep this evil off of me, Ricky Bobby, with your penis, okay? That's what this is.
Like, I'm not wrong. I'm not saying that's what's happening here, but...
I'm not saying you're wrong.
We need to get to the question, because we got into a whole side clam here.
Well, you open the clam.
Open up the clam.
Did you have an answer to the question? Here's what I'll tell you. Here's my answer to the question.
I like clams, by the way. It's good food.
I like clams, too. In the event that the New York Rangers do sign a guy like Brian Boyle... The reason you do it again is to be, it's not, you're not signing Boyle to be anything more than a fourth line talent, right? And in that case, you're really not developing talent on the fourth line. if you're taking a roster spot away from Elias Anderson on the fourth line, you have bigger problems than taking away a spot for Elias Anderson. And part of the reason why I think it's such a... You do want guys like Brian Boyle to kind of shepherd the sheep, right? You need somebody there to kind of take control in that regard and teach the players how to play the game the right way. And I do think some of that is overstated, but Brian Boyle's still a good hockey player. And he's a fine 1 or 2 year stopgap before the Rangers kind of move forward in that regard. The only issue with a guy like Boyle is you lose the effectiveness of a guy like Boone Jeves. And he's a guy who could easily and probably should easily be the Rangers' fourth line center next year. That's my issue. But like key kids who are going to have roles, hopefully, and are going to grow and do all this fun stuff, Brian Boyle doesn't affect them one iota. Not one.
All right, well, let's break it down very quick. Cap Friendly's Rangers roster, you got 15 forwards listed.
Well, that's right off the bat. Right there.
Right off the bat, Matt Bolesky is in the AHL. So you're down to 14. And then you can say Greg McKegg
is like AHL.
He's in AHL.
Put him in the AHL. Who's on the board?
Boom. We're at 13. And then you say to yourself, is Chris Kreider still here?
Question mark?
I don't know. But I think we can safely say, Joe, that Chris Kreider, Vlad Nemestikov, Ryan Strom, one of them won't be here. I don't feel like that's a stretch.
I don't think that's a stretch at all. I fully agree with you. At least one of them.
So we're down to what? What did I say? We're down to 12 now or 13?
Right? We should have kept count, but yes, yeah. I think we're at 13 still.
Yeah, so let's say we're at 13, which means
and we haven't made a decision yet on Kreider.
Yeah, and you haven't made a decision yet on Kreider, but we're just saying one of Strome, Kreider, and Vlad are gone, and so the situation we are at now is you have
One extra forward.
You have Nieves as your 13th, and you know you have your bottom six looks like you know Jesper Fast, Brett Howden, Brendan Lemieux, Elias Anderson probably, maybe Vlad Nemestikov if he's the
probably
guy who's around.
Vlad Nemestikov.
So, like, is there room for another guy? Yeah, but you do have to ask where people fit. So, like, do the Rangers look at someone like Brian Boyle only if other things move around? I think, like, because you need to make the room, right? So, let's go back. We're at 15. Bolesky gone. Let's just say one of Vlad, Strom, and Kreider's gone. Two gone. And then you have Greg McKegg, not really there. So that's 15 minus 3, and then you're at 12. So you have no Nieves, and you have Brian Boyle. There is room for another guy. It just...
I'm sighing there. Because there's a second layer to this question, which is the financial aspect.
Yeah,
can you afford... Can you afford Brian Boyle in an environment where you're already strapped for cash to the point where you're trying to figure out what you have to do with Nemestikov and Strom to save money? You might liquidate Chris Kreider to save money. Can you really afford Brian Boyle? Is that a luxury you need when you have a guy like Boone Jeves who can easily play that role? And to me, the answer is no. So if that's your concern with a guy like Boyle, I'm 100% behind that. But if you're worried about whether or not, like, Boyle's going to stop a guy from showing off his skills, it's not going to happen. It's just not a circumstance
Boyle
where that's...
Boyle is coming off of a two-year deal with a...
the Devils, and then he played his time in Nashville.
2.55 AAV. And so, you know, he did have 18 goals last season, but, you know... He also hasn't played 82 games in a little bit, and it's so funny to think, because, you know, we saw him at that stage of his career, but Brian Boyle isn't a kid anymore, so...
No.
He's 34. Like, I would imagine, you probably could get Brian Boyle at a lot less than the $2.55 million he made last season.
But even, like, $1 million the Rangers don't have to spend right now. This is really what it comes down to.
I'm just saying there's scuttlebutt.
Don't take that attitude with me.
There's scuttlebutt about Brian Boyle, and I get it on paper because there is some uncertainty with the center position, and it would be nice to have a guy like Brian Boyle who you can be like, ah, Jesus, Brian Boyle, take a couple shifts on the second line, show the kids how the hell things go, and then, you know, Filipino watches him and says, wow, he's very tall, look at how he does the face-off. And then maybe he gets better at face-offs, even though face-offs aren't necessarily important.
I'll scuttle your butt, you son of a bitch.
Filipino was very bad at face-offs last season, and I don't care very much.
No, face-offs are stupid. Zachary Smilowitz. Who wins in a fight, 100 New York City rats or a Kodiak bear?
Mmm.
So do you remember it was like a meme.
100 rats?
Yes, 100.
The bear.
Well, we're talking New York City rats, though, so the rats could be the size of a cat.
Dude, bears are gigantic.
Yeah, but here's the thing, okay? And this is just the point that I'm going to make on this. 100 rats is a lot of, like, they could be eating the bear's feet. If they all attack at once, a bear is not going to be able to stop them. They're going to most of them are going to die, but they're going to win.
Homeboy, you don't know a bear.
You have number. What is the bear going to do, Michael?
A bear can weigh 1,400 fucking pounds.
Right. You have 100 rats. And I'm talking cat-sized rats.
My cat is like 12 pounds, and it's a big cat.
So
that's a joke.
I just think they'd over.
They got a tiny mouth. What are they going to do? The bear's got thick fur. That's a bunch of bullshit. It's the bear by a mile.
They'd overwhelm in numbers, I think. The bear would eventually get tired, and the rats.
The bear can take it to the water. The bear can get up a tree. Like, a rat will get up a tree. And you know what? The rats can take it to the water. They're sewer rats.
You're rethinking this, aren't you?
I'm just being honest and fair, unlike you, you son of a bitch.
I'm telling you, like, New York City rats will just, they'll murder your family. That's what it comes down to.
Dude, I don't know. A bear is...
like, I'm not saying it's going to be... It's going to be a tough fight, okay? But I just think...
Okay, here's the thing. 100 rats swarming a bear doesn't happen unless the bear is dead, right? The bear would just pick these things off.
But if they all attack it... Like, here's the main question is...
Rats don't have any sense of colony. Have the rats been trained? They're not going to defend their brethren.
But that's what I'm saying. If it is just 100 rats just milling around and they're all sure, and I don't think it's going to make a difference because the bear's at an immediate disadvantage because there's one of him against 100 New York City hungry rats.
All right, well, where's this fight happening?
I don't know.
Whenever I have these animal
in the subway of New York,
a nice fair battleground is a drained pool. It's just it's a cement bowl,
Jesus
right?
Christ.
So it serves.
What
as,
type
as
of
a
thought have you put into this?
You don't want to know.
Too
so
much.
I spend thinking about shit like this.
I think
Connor has a theory that he can fight off a literally unlimited amount of coyotes. And
didn't you and I get into this fight once?
Yes, we have, because I've been arguing about this with Connor.
An unlimited number of coyotes?
Unlimited amount of coyotes.
Is he insinuating he'd never get tired? Is that the point?
It is his claim.
His legitimate claim.
With a single punch, he can just.
I'm sorry. His thought. I was talking about unlimited stamina as like a superpower that he was being granted.
No.
He thinks he could legitimately kill unlimited numbers of coyotes on like as a regular human being.
No, like, yeah, his theory is like, let's say five hours you just poured coyotes into an empty pool, right, a concrete bowl, he would be fine in 5 hours.
There's 0% chance.
Yeah, that is his claim, and I think
I'm going to say three coyotes and he's dead. What kind of a weapon does he have?
Just fists, that's his claim.
No, Michael, your brother is a sick individual. He can't be trusted. He's wrong. Tell him I'd say he's wrong. That's an insane. I have nothing to say.
Joe,
we have to move on.
There was a bear named Clyde, who lived at a zoo. And when he died, 1 year later, they found a 9-inch thick fat layer on him, according to Wikipedia. 9 inches of fat. What is a rat going to fucking do?
My only thought process on this is if it's just in the wild, the bear wins.
Of course the bear wins.
If you can train the rats to fight in unison, I think they overwhelm the bear.
Yeah, maybe. You know what? If the rats go straight for the eyes...
That's what I'm saying. They go right for the head, okay? And then you just... They're not stomping around the feet. Listen, you're going to sacrifice a lot of rat brethren, okay? It's going to be a bloody day.
It's going to be D-Day on that bear, yeah.
But you're going to win the battle. It's just, you have too much. There's just too much. That's all.
But at what point is it a win? They just need to take it down and have
Yeah, I don't care if there's one rat left and it can't even move. You've won.
You don't think that rat gets involved in drinking, missing his friends?
I mean, maybe, but he won the great rat war bear of all time. That's all. Clem Fandango, two-parter for you fine gentlemen. Who do you think is the better odds of making the team out of camp? Recall or Hayek? Also, if the top six out of camp is 76... Oh, so Shea Stahl, 8, is who? Did he mean 18? No, he said 18. What who is 8? Is that Fox?
Is Fox
going to wear 8? All right, let's do the first question. Hayek or Rykov? I don't think either of them are going to make the team, but if we're being honest, it is absolutely Hayek.
Hayek, to me, makes all sorts of sense for a lot of reasons. Like, he's already had the taste of the NHL. They both can play, you know, they're both lefties that play the left side, which gives them, you know, a good kind of level ground in that regard. Rykov is interesting. He's become, in many ways, the forgotten prospect, which he doesn't deserve because he was quite good in the KHL last season on a terrible, terrible team, HK Sochi. So I think he could surprise some people in the AHL. With all that being said,
yeah,
I'm all about Lieber Hayek being the more interesting guy just in terms of his likelihood to make the roster. I don't think either of them do, like you said. But
see, I would almost disagree. I'm more excited about Rykov as a prospect than I am Hayek, I think.
Well, so am I in terms of what they can be. But right now, I think Lieber Hayek is the guy who the coaching staff knows.
Right, and Rykov has to... He needs to figure out the North American ice, which is something that he's just going to have to...
Especially for a huge adjustment. With understanding gap control and understanding the speed of the game and where the physicality is in the North American game, like, that's a lot for him to wrap his head around. Like, and don't forget, the thing with Lieber Hack is he played Major Junior. You know, he was in the WHL, so... You know, he had, I think, a couple seasons there. I think it was Saskatoon and Regina is where he was. And you know, Rykov, like you said, is just only really known Russia. So that means he knows that ice surface. And I think I think you and I talked about this, or maybe it was in our Slack channel. Like, I was looking at the hit stats from the KHL, because you do have a lot of interesting stats you can look at. And he was just not a defenseman who registered hits. And
which really isn't totally unusual in the KHL.
Yeah, it's a less physical league, bigger ice surface. But it was still one of those things. Like, oh well, I'm sure that's something that you know the coaching staff here is going to say, like, yeah, we want you to hit, kid. Like, you gotta
get there and hit.
You gotta knock guys off the puck. 6'2", he should be able to hit. He's 225, so he's solid as a rock.
Yeah, it's a long answer, but those are the answers to your questions. Mike O'Kanick, Joe, do you always ignore my questions because you don't want to empower another Mike? Maybe. That's my answer to that. And then he has an actual question, and he is a patron, so I am allowing this abuse because of that. Not that I want to trade him, but if you were going to trade Elias Anderson in a prospect swap like Buffalo did with Nylander, what prospect would you trade for? I think the only guy that legitimately makes sense in this regard is Puljujärvi.
Puljujärvi, yeah.
Puljujärvi.
Who's also Puljujärvi. An RFA, by the way. He makes sense to me.
I mean, how many other people, especially in like a realistic sense, Anderson, you're either selling super low on Anderson or you're selling Anderson to somebody who, you know, in the case of Edmonton, you can just be like, listen, we're going to get a trade of change of scenery guy. You're going to get a change of scenery guy. That's all it is.
Yeah, Puljujärvi is still 21. He did play 46 games.
Edmonton completely bungled his usage.
And
just a usage bungler.
That's a really good word for it. They have just bungled him, like, in every possible measure, right? And, like, some people will look at 46 games, 4 goals, and 5 assists. Why do people think this kid's good? Especially, like, his AHL stats aren't, you know, jumping off the page.
Because he was bungled. It's straight bungled.
It's not a secret that Edmonton like, Connor McDavid succeeded not because the prospect development good is good.
He's just an amazing prospect. He's just, that's all.
He's just hockey Jesus. He's very, very good at the hockey thing.
Which is an important, you know, we have to say, that is an important aspect of being a hockey player, is being good at that hockey thing. Let's do that hockey.
With the skating and the shooting and the, yeah.
The skating and the shooting and the scoring the goals. Yeah, that's the only real trade that I can see that makes sense in the regard, like, if you're going to move Anderson in a deal where you're not completely losing out and selling low, it's going to be one of those change of scenery deals, and that's kind of what we're working with right now. Gray Market. Hello, Michael and Joseph. Is Trouba historically considered a good power play quarterback? How would you rank our current options for that role? Trouba played an enormous amount of time on the power play in Winnipeg, and he put up 50 points last year, so that's nothing to sneeze at. Now, the Jets have Line A, and they have a couple of other trigger guys on the power play that definitely make something of a difference, but to me, I mean, listen, next year, Trouba is easily the most suited for the power play role, simply because, A, he's done it before, and B, he's the best of the options. I mean, D'Angelo, actually, I was going to say, I kind of forgot about D'Angelo. I might be doing him a disservice there. But Fox isn't going to be ready right away. And you know what? D'Angelo, he moved the puck really well. D'Angelo may be my number one, to be completely honest with you. It may be D'Angelo, Trouba, and part of that isn't a talent thing so much as the Rangers are going to be asking Trouba to do a lot, and I know I've mentioned this on the podcast before. It's the Ryan McDonagh thing again. Do you really want to have Trouba do a lot of everything and just kind of take him away from these other opportunities? That's really what it comes down to, and I don't know if I want that.
Well said.
I often say things well.
Here's the thing about Jacob Trouba that most folks should understand. I'm looking at Natural Stat Trick right now.
Natural Stat Trick.
Last season, Joe, 18 power play points.
We're talking about Trouba.
Yeah, Jacob Trouba.
So that's actually, for the amount of offense that he put up, that's not a ton.
Not a ton. The years before that, Joe, in the 54 games he played in 2017-18, 3 power play points.
But was he playing a lot on the power play back then?
I'm just telling you. I mean, 81 minutes, I'd have to compare it to... I have to look at his per game.
Wait, he only played 81 minutes?
I have to look at his per games, buddy.
Well, I'm just saying, right, it's Trouba off the bat because, again, he's the most suited for it.
Yeah, but so last season it was... I'm sorry, I just found the answer for you. So 2017-18, 1:30 on the power play. This past season, 2:04, so another 34 seconds average.
And he put up the offense to boot, so...
Yeah, so my whole thing is, like, yeah, he is that guy, but I think the point you raise about you don't want to McDonagh him and just say, like, you're on PK 1, power play 1, even strength, you're
going
to play with Mark Stahl.
You're on a lot of ones, kid.
Yeah, just hang on as long as you can, but the...
Don't die.
Like, you have Tony D'Angelo, like...
Who's a very good hockey player?
He does the power play thing very well. Let it happen. You also have Kevin Shattenkirk, who, you know, I think if you tell him, like, you know, play on your offside on the second power play unit, try to get your confidence back up. Why not? But and to rate him, I would say it's ADA, Trouba, Shattenkirk, Fox, in terms of the power play quarterbacks. And I only put Fox where he is because, you know, he's a rookie. We don't know, right? It's very hard to say what he's going to be able to do. With that being said, he was just a beast on the power play in college and a primary point
machine
wizard. So I'm all about giving Adam Fox a chance, and that's why we have a preseason and training camp.
So there's the next question, actually, from Ev Dowd. Hey guys, love the show. What are your expectations for Tony D'Angelo this year? Who do you think ends up with a higher point total, Fox or D'Angelo, assuming Fox does not spend the time in Hartford? I'm going to say, again, D'Angelo simply because, A, he was a half a point per game player last year anyway.
He was 30 and 60 last season.
And B, D'Angelo has the NHL experience. Like, D'Angelo should be a better hockey player next year because he has the experience.
The only reason D'Angelo doesn't have more points next season is Anthony D'Angelo.
Yeah, that's a good...
He gets in his own way with off-the-ice nonsense or on-the-ice nonsense. He's proven in the past he's capable of both in abundance. And, you know, if he keeps his head on straight, does what he has to do to keep David Quinn, to stay on the right side of David Quinn, Tony D'Angelo has 50-point potential on the blue line. That sounds crazy.
I don't think it sounds that crazy.
I know that might sound crazy to some people, but he's legitimately that good with the puck.
He's that good. The files are in the computer.
In the computer. Like 15 goals, 35 assists, 10 goals, 40 assists, not at all unreasonable.
I don't think so either. We understand it sounds crazy.
Not this season, mind you, but like
in general,
years. He can develop into that kind of guy.
That kind of guy.
That kind of guy.
You hear me? He's that kind of guy. That's what it comes down to.
61 games and...
Tony D's that kind of guy, okay? He's going to do the thing in the thing and put the thing in the thing.
Please stop this.
The other Erik Karlsson. NFL and MLB games are in London. Should the NHL dabble in transatlantic games? If so, where? London doesn't seem the best. Sweden, Russia? The Rangers played in Sweden, or was it Sweden? Maybe it was Prague when Zverev was still on the team. Didn't they do like a European Cup thing? It was the first year they had Brad Richards.
Didn't the Rangers play Hank's team, Modo?
No, they played
No, it's not Modo.
Frölunda, they did not play. Bitch. They didn't play Frölunda. Right. They played Berlin, I think.
Berlin?
Yeah. The bear, it has the bear with the tongue sticking out, the logo. Everybody thought it was so cool.
A polar bear?
Well, it's just like a bear. It was something with a B.
A Kodiak bear covered in rats?
Anyway, I think the NHL needs to do a better job of expanding that market, especially China's a huge hockey market, so I would not be opposed to...
Did the Kings play there in the preseason or some shit?
I don't think they did. You're going to make me seem like an idiot if I say the NHL should go there, because they haven't. And then they have Michael, so you keep making me look stupid. We're going to go to the next question. Abby.
Yes, they did play.
All right, you know what? Shut up. What is the latest news on Lindy Ruff? There is none. That's the answer. He's going to be here this year. It is what it is.
You're going to have to. I found a list of international games.
You're going to have to get. Yes. NHL teams. Okay, let's go. Where did the Rangers play? All 2007.
Right, calm down, you fuck.
2007. Put it on the board. I want it on the board.
2007. New York Rangers didn't play anywhere.
Okay. 2008. Put it on the board. No, it had to be 2006 Bern. Then. SC Bern, not Berlin. That's what it was. Bern.
They also played in Bern. They played Metallurg Magnitogorsk, and they played Tampa Bay in Prague.
Yeah, it was like the European
Cup. And
they played
Tampa Bay in Prague again.
All right, so I was mostly right, and that gives me tons of credit.
We're both dopey boys.
But I'm correct. Byards?
And last season, I wasn't done talking.
Well, I decided you were finished.
All
right. No, go ahead. Last season, what?
No.
Tell me the fucking China thing, and I'll lose my shit.
Oh, okay. Well, May 2nd... No, it was September 15th of 2018.
This is the worst podcast last season, of all time.
Boston and Calgary played two games in China. Shenzhen and Beijing.
I don't even know
And in 2017, the Kings and Canucks played two games. So that's 2 years in a row, you son of a bitch.
I'm just...
Rangers and Panthers played in Puerto Rico?
When did that happen?
2006.
That's not that long ago that neither of us would remember that, for the record.
They won that game.
Goddamn right they did. Just that Puerto Rican victory.
3-2 win over the Florida Panthers, September 23rd, 2006. Boom. Fucking boom.
Hope you're proud of yourself. Byards?
I offered information. You offered just saying no one played in China.
Oh, it wasn't that nobody played in China. It was just that it's an untapped market that maybe is semi-tapped, so... That's all I have to say. Byards, first of all, really enjoy the podcast. Question. Hank's contract comes up in 2 years, and with Shesterkin waiting in the wings, what do you think will become of Georgiev moving forward? We've kind of talked about this a little bit. It's insane. It's absolutely insane to think right now, we could trade Georgiev because, because we have Shesterkin. You don't trade what you don't know. And you don't know what you don't have until you know what you have. So the reality of the situation is the New York Rangers need to figure out what they have in Georgiev, and they need to figure out what they have in Shesterkin before they can make any decisions. Henrik Lundqvist is going to be an NHL goaltender for 2 more years for the New York Rangers. I think there's an argument that could be made as to whether or not that's going to be he's going to make the team better, if you will.
You keep Georgiev at least.
You got to figure it. Who's on the board? You got to figure it out. That's really the be all end all on this one.
Who's
okay?
on the board? That's what Joe says. He wants to know who's on that board.
If you're not telling me who's on the board, we're going to have serious problems.
How many rats can you get on that person?
How many rats are on the board? I mean,
How
think about it.
How many rats does it take to get to their eyes?
How many rats does it take to get to the center of the Tootsie Roll rat?
In the case of the Toronto Maple Leafs, you need one Georgiev to get to their eyes. Okay, I don't know how many Shesterkins you need.
Tweets by Phil. Hey, Joe and Mike. Can all the upgrades to the back end be for nothing without changes to the defensive coaching? As I said before with the Lindy Ruff thing, no. He's here. It is what it is. The Rangers, you're going to have to deal with it, at least for now. And then we'll figure out what happens there as we move forward. Panarin 2020. Hey, Joe and Mike. This, of all the
very quickly, John Davidson probably likes anything. Lindy Ruff,
just
and the rest of the coaching staff like him. There's no way that all the money that's going into this team in the rebuild, if there's some sort of belief that the defensive coaching isn't good enough, that's going to change in a hurry.
It sure felt like he's here, or at least was here last year, to just kind of make sure that, like, David Quinn, you know, learned the ropes, if you will. You don't need Lindy Ruff here anymore. That's all. Panarin 2020. Out of all the draft picks we've made the past 2 years, outside of Kako and Kravtsov, who are you most excited about?
K'Andre Miller.
Yep, K'Andre Miller. Who's on the board? K'Andre Miller's on the board.
Who's on the board? K'Andre Miller.
Just Miller is just he's a beast. He only started playing defense 3 years ago. Just somebody who absolutely you can't say enough good things about the kid. That's all.
The season he had, even though it was abbreviated and interrupted by injury, with
he's
the
on
Badgers,
the board.
He's on my board, Joe.
He's on the board.
Put him on the board. How about who's your
right
number
on the
two?
Board.
That's fun. Who would be your numero dos?
Lundqvist.
Oh. See, I agree with you. I like that.
No, look at that. See, the two of us, we're just out here fucking agreeing with each other. No Kravtsov, no Kako. All
right, yeah. Then I would say now's Lundqvist.
Yeah, I think that's a really easy decision to make, at least in that regard.
He's on my board.
He's on the board. Well, this is part of the board, Michael. You got to figure that out. Who's on the board? He's on the board. Final question.
Like
and
Tarmo Ronin. And no one's talking about him.
You're just out here liking Ruminen, huh? Interesting. I think you're better than everybody else.
Can you spell his last name for me right now?
With your R-E-U-M-M-E-N? How much of it did I get right?
There's not a single M in a surname, and I believe you tried to sneak two in there, so...
There was an N and an M, Michael. I tried to cover both of my bases.
You were thinking about M&Ms again, weren't you?
I do love M&Ms. Good old M&M. You know, I had a neighbor show me that if you put M&Ms in a bowl and put them in the microwave for, like, I don't know, 15 seconds or so, the inside of the M&M melts, but the outside stays crunchy, and you just crunch into an M&M that's then, like, melted chocolate. It's
and
delicious.
People wonder why our country got to the moon first.
They do. Stephen Gulf. Hey, guys. I was very happy to hear on the last podcast that you could take questions through email. I work in neuroscience research, and I've read a lot of studies about CTE, and it's amazing to me that the NHL has been trying to downplay the science so much. As a huge hockey fan as well, I'm often conflicted by my love of the game and how little the sport is doing to address the issue, starting with the fact that they won't even publicly acknowledge how much of a problem it is. I'm always curious to see what other What did you say?
And the NHL was just given a humanitarian award.
Yes, which is insane. I'm always curious to see what other hockey fans think could be done about CTE. Given that it is becoming such a large problem, what are your thoughts on the steps the NHL can take to mitigate it, aside from what they have already done? Here's the easy slash very difficult answer to this question. What the NHL can do, honest to God, is admit that it's a fucking problem. That's the first thing they can do. They
well, that can admit that's step one.
Because they can admit no that hockey causes CTE. Yeah. That's what they that constant head trauma causes CTE. They can admit that. The minute you admit that,
all you need is brain trauma.
The floodgates open up in that regard. They really do. It changes a lot of things.
There's a couple of solutions no one's gonna like. The first of which is slow the game down. If the game gets slowed down, the force involved in collisions reduces, the likelihood of a brain hitting the skull reduces. You have less, the collisions won't be quite as violent if the game slows down. How do you slow the game down? In so doing, you make it less entertaining. Hockey is the sport it is because it's the fastest team sport in the world. Like, that's part of hockey's culture. And then you enter this really uncomfortable world that football has had to deal with, where you just say to yourself, all right, we're just accepting the fact that there's going to be a lot of brain trauma in the sport that we love. And that is very problematic. I think there is something to be said about equipment, about, you know, things like, you know, what people are trying to do with mouth guards that, you know, help stabilize your head and, you know, where your jaw is and all that. The other thing is, do we need shoulder pads that are like knight's armor? Or should we maybe go back to like the 80s shitty Wayne Gretzky shoulder pads that are closer to pillows? Like, there's definitely something there, I think, to take that down. Other than that, like, we're dealing with a sport that seems like it was designed, like football in many ways, to generate concussions and brain trauma, right? Like, it happens every game. There's trauma to the human brain in every single game, and many times on every single shift. If you're getting hit in the body, nowhere near your head, you can still get a concussion. You can still suffer brain trauma. That's a crazy thing to think about, but that's the reality here. That's the science.
Here's a realistic thing the NHL can do. And when I say they can care, I'm being 100% serious.
You could take
Mike is right, by the way. But if you're not gonna slow the game down, if anything the game is getting faster, here's what you actually do. You institute legitimate punishments for teams that don't adhere by the concussion code. And I don't remember who the Bruin was. Was it Pasternak? Said that he played with a concussion basically for 3 weeks in the playoffs.
Oh,
and then like admitted to it after whoever it was, something like that, you lose next year's first round draft pick. Period. End of story. You don't get another choice. Absolutely not. You hand out mandatory, like at the minimum, 15 game suspensions for any headshot. And if it's intentional or you're a repeat offender, go to the MLB suspension policy with steroids and say, listen, it's a 3-strike policy and you're out of the game. I get it that it's very difficult to enforce those things. And here's another thing that we need to talk about. And if anything, this almost makes it more uncomfortable. Any issues you have with NHL player safety, you have to blame the players, because they're the guys that are not negotiating a stricter safety policy in the CBA. They're not concerned about punishing each other for taking liberties out on the ice. They think they're going to be able to do it with their fists and take care of it themselves. That's the problem. The NHL players' safety is its own brand of stupidity at times, but the maximum fines and, you know, you can only get 5-game suspension, and then if it's a in-hearing meeting and all that stuff, that's all negotiated in the CBA.
I feel like
if they want to get serious, they can get serious.
I feel like all we need to understand about where the league is and where, to some extent, you know, the league encompasses players and general managers and ownership and everything. All we need to understand where things are in terms of how serious dirty hits and repeat offenders and problematic play that causes concussions are, just look at the deal that Tom Wilson got, Joe.
Yeah.
$5.16 million for 6 years for a repeat offender who is widely considered one of the dirtiest players in hockey, if not the dirtiest, and probably the most dangerous just because he's so big, right? He's so big that when he does go over that line, he's 6'4". You know, like when Brad Marchand slew-foot someone, it's super dangerous. But when Tom Wilson tries to kill Oscar Sundquist in the preseason, like, oh yeah, he could have killed him. Like, he's that much of a force. And, like, that guy's getting that contract. That part of the game isn't going to go away if guys like that are getting that sort of contract. And that's why I think it was last September, I think, or August, I wrote a piece about, like, looking at, you know, where suspensions came from and how the league handed them out. And, like, the bottom line is you need to have stiffer penalties. And I agree with you. You need to find a way to punish teams that make that, like, you have, if a team has a player, if the Capitals have Tom Wilson and he knocks a guy out, let's say he gives a guy a concussion, he's out 6 months, there's something to be said about Tom Wilson shouldn't be back on the ice for 6 months.
Right. Right? Or you're kind of right, too.
And the Capitals should also take a hit, because how else are we going to learn?
Right. You're a repeat offender. Okay, now you're losing draft picks. You're a repeat offender once. Okay, you just lost the second round pick. You know, something like that. And people are going to hear that, and they're going to balk, and they're going to go, oh, it's a men's game, and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to say this. I really shouldn't, because I don't know. But last conversation about this, Michael Sauer could not, like, he can't live a normal life. And I don't know if that's still the case or not, and I hope it isn't. But you're talking about people's lives.
If it's not the case, then his life is still dramatically
altered. It was altered at best for a period of time.
The quality of his life dramatically changed, obviously not for the better. His career, what he worked for all of his career, just went away with one hit by Dion Phaneuf, I believe it was. And, you know, It just so happened that was for Michael Sauer, that's all it took. And that's this thing. And I know, you know, I said, you know, take hitting out of the game. And, you know, as someone who follows and covers the women's game, there are a ton of concussions in women's hockey as well. And that is a big thing that doesn't get talked about a lot. But there's also the whole theory of, you know, like a lot of, you know, in women's hockey, you have full face shields, full visors. And, you know, when you're coming up through juniors, you have all that and you feel indestructible, right? And there is a big problem with that. Like, it's crazy and counterintuitive, but there might be something to less equipment. Like, keep your helmets on, obviously, but, like,
that's what they talk about with football. Take away helmets.
Because the helmets are, it becomes a blunt instrument, right? It becomes a weapon, essentially. That's a crazy thing to think of, but like a shoulder pad in hockey becomes a weapon. When you don't pull back at all because you know you're not going to sustain an injury, but you can just clean a guy's clock out and hit him on the jaw, like Tom Wilson will do, it's a problem.
I agree, Michael. I actually read that question ahead and saved it for the end because I knew it was going to be
That's why you're professional, topic. Joe.
You know what, Michael? I feel like a professional, if it makes you feel any better. So it should, yeah. Because you get to work with me every single day. Patreon.com/BlueShirtBanter. Again, please donate. We've gotten a flood of new donations. I appreciate that. Michael appreciates that. It helps us keep the show better. So we would like you to continue to do that if possible. You get awesome tchotchkes, too. Mike sends out stickers and mugs, and sometimes he writes little hand-drawn notes, and sometimes it's photos of him nude, and you just don't know what you're going to get, basically, is what I'm saying. So
I normally write thank you.
You know, Michael, he draws me things sometimes. Sometimes he, you know, he goes out of his way to
push you in it and make
He draws me a bath and he puts delicious, like, rose petals in it for me. I don't know why I said delicious.
Have you ever eaten a flower? A lot of people eat flowers.
Some people do eat flowers. I'm down for eating a flower.
What do you think is the best tasting flower?
It's a great question. Honey flower? Is that even a thing?
Did you just make up a flower because you couldn't think of a flower?
Yeah, honey. Well, I'm trying to think of, like, roses can't taste good. Sunflower seeds are delicious. Does that count?
I think that counts. I'm looking up the 10 most edible flowers.
Well, that doesn't mean delicious. While he's doing that, a new patron, 25211.
Chrysanthemums.
5212. Adam Nowick, Aiden Gaspar, Alex Gardner, Armael Kistner, Andre Chicagoff, Anthony Viola, Arch Williams, Bob Cowa, Bobby Callahan, Chris Habibi, Chris Lucas, Chris O'Connor, Christopher Manamite, CJ Vivola, Clark Carroll, the past three are
so
new.
Bad at this still.
I don't know. You want to do this from now on, you son of a bitch? Craig Launchin, Dan Carozzi, Daniel DeGen, Danny Santiago, David Elsinger, Eric Cohn, Eric Carlson, Fancy Lawrence, 50, Gabriel Vargas, Igor Zatlovsky, James Dangles, Jeffrey Stein, Jermaine Francis, both of them are also new. John Reppy, Johnny Lowe, Jordan Sassone, Joshua Zarkin, Heath Franchillo, Matt from Brooklyn, Guy from Montana, Michael Alsante, Michael Kanick, Michael Marcus, Michael Scott, Michael Silvers, Michael Offit, Panarin 2020, Sammy Vogue. It is a squad of Mikes. Another new one, Stephanie Benvengo, Stink Fleeman, Tall Guy Robert, another new one, The Tin Man, Thomas Osa. We have a couple more on the next page. And then Trevor Kempner, one more. Thank you all for donating. We appreciate it. We love all of you.
Fill a cup with that amount of Joe.
I hate you.